Well, again, let me say thank you so much. I looked on my list last night to see how many times I'd actually done this before. And as far as speaking to entire churches, it's my 106th time. Now, I've talked to other groups, dozens more. But I have to tell you that I've never felt more welcome. I've never had anybody pick up half as many handouts, all right? We actually used up the 100 of everything that I brought. And there's more of them back there. And tonight, I actually put together tonight's program last night. This is the leftovers from the other. Not less important, just the last stuff, all right? And that handout, if it's not there right now, it's already been printed. It'll be there sometime before the evening's up, if not tomorrow. So again, thank you. You've asked me more questions than I've been able to handle, as far as numbers, as far as knowing the answers, okay? Thank you for that. Also, I'm not talking about what he said a while ago, all right? I've already covered that. I'm putting the other things together that I left off at the end of the presentations. Let me give you my excuse. This is normally a three-section seminar, and when I have to spread it out to four, or when I am asked to spread it out to four, okay, then it gets a little bit more piecemeal at the end. But let me assure you, what I'm talking about tonight is not any less important than what we've talked about before. This next slide right here, it's real hard to see. My wife thinks this is the most important slide that I talk about the whole week. She told me that yesterday. Let's talk about it. For those of you that are educators, you might recall that Piaget, if I say that right, put together theories of educational development. A few years later, and I had to study those one time, but a few years later, Lawrence Kohlberg came back and he said, I'm going to take that concept and put together the development of our children's morals. How do our children develop morally? And he put together this chart, and then there's some things I want to say about it at the end. This is how our children grow up. You probably never thought it was systematic. It is systematic. They start off egocentric. Is a little baby very concerned about anything but how wet, dirty, or hungry they are? All right? No. They care about the fact that you don't want to get up. No. All right? Whatever's going on. They're totally egocentric. They have to be because they can't take care of themselves. As they grow up a little bit, and this is all part of the pre-conventional or the childish level, all right? As they grow up a little bit, they grow up into the what we call punishment reward. Y'all know what I'm talking about. The two-year-old, the three-year-old, all right? The classic example we use is hand on the stove. They learn that if they put the hand on the stove and it's hot, they get burnt, okay? All right? But they learn that there's certain things they can do and get by, and there's certain things they can do that they're not going to get by, and there's certain things they can do and get rewarded. And they start balancing out what can they do and get rewarded, and what's going to happen? Am I going to get hurt if they do that? That typically goes up to 3 or 4 years old. Now, then they start becoming worldly. We don't think a kid's becoming worldly at 5 or 6 years old, but that's where it starts. All right, they become worldly. They go into the category, the conventional category of what makes me and mine happy. That is what I think of there is the little boys playing with their games or the little girls playing with their tea sets or whatever the things are that little kids like to do. They like to play as a group. I mean, every 4 or 5 year old has a best friend, all right? My granddaughter this morning at the breakfast table was talking about how some cartoon character was now her best friend. Actually, she said, I have a crush on him. All right, at 5 years old. Now, we're not too worried about that because it's an animated character, all right? So we're not worried about the social implications of that. But nevertheless, they start looking at what makes me and mine happy. And eventually, as they grow up, typically about teenage years, they start going into how far can I go and stay out of trouble? How far can I go and stay out of trouble? Typically, it starts in teenage years. Now, here's something I need to ask you. How many of you know people that never got past that? We all know people that never got past that. A whole lot of them are in jail. All right? Here's what happens from there. If they move up, forward, if they go forward, they go to what we would call, in many ways, the golden rule, the principled concepts, Christian ideals. What would a moral, right-thinking person think or do? What's right to do? And then the very highest level of that right is a conscious decision. It's a decision of personal ethics that appeal to logic, morality, and consistency. We all follow, this is, yes, theoretical, but I believe we all follow these patterns pretty close. Now, why does that make a difference? Subsequent research, after this came out, you know, the one thing about it is when you come up with a theory is you want to prove that it's true. Well, it's been studied, this theory has been studied over and over and over. And what they found out was, and we know this from biblical teachings as well, that nothing affects your child's moral character more than your teaching. I'll come to who that you is in just a moment. Your teaching and guidance. But it only works if you teach and guide your child. This is what they proved. If a child ever moves from number four, what keeps me out of trouble, to number five, what would Christ want us to do? It will always be through the primary adult figure in that child's life. It will always be through the primary adult figure in that child's life. I want you to notice there, I didn't say parent. Okay? That child's got somebody that they trust as their parent figure. Sometimes it might be a teacher. Sometimes it might be grandma. Sometimes it might be grandpa. Hopefully it's mom or dad. All right? But whoever it is for that child, if they move up to this next level, it will be because they taught them to move to that next level. Otherwise, your children's friends' morals and behavior will be the strongest if somebody doesn't take the effort to teach them. The gist of, last night when I was working on this, I realized I had a theme. The theme is don't be complacent. Because if you're complacent, you're going to have problems. And I know, I'm sorry, but some of you it's already happened. All right? And I'm sorry about that. And I'm sorry if I have to be the reminder of that. But we're going to look at the end of this, how we can work on that side of it as well. I'm not going to leave that alone. But I think this right here, if we think about this and think about how we're raising our children, it'll make all the difference in the world. Let's face it. There's nothing that we care more about as parents or grandparents than the morality of our children. If we're Christians, that's it. We're worried about that than anything. My oldest daughter and her husband aren't going to church right now. They're raised in the church, all right? He worked for a church for years and had some problems, and rather than work around it, they're just not going to church right now. Bothers me and bothers me a lot, okay? All right? Because I raised her right. We worry about our kids. And even just as much, I think my daughter and my son-in-law are doing what they think is right. I don't think they're treating the grandkids right by not taking them to church on Sunday morning. And that bothers me even more than the fact that they're not going. All right. Okay, I wanted to cover my reading list. This was actually one of the past handouts. There's at least 50 copies of this back at the back. But I want to actually talk about some of these books for a moment. Because you might want to get them. All these are available on Amazon. The first one is the book we talked about in detail the other day called The iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for the Adulthood. If you just want to know what's going on and why, it's a very interesting read. You got to like numbers, though, okay? Because it is basically a lot of statistics and a lot of numbers. But if you really want to know what's going on, don't want to guess what's going on, that's the book for you. The next one is The TechWise Family by Andy Crouch. We're going to summarize that book as soon as I get through this chart right here. We're going to summarize that book very quickly. It's a fun read. It's on Amazon. It'll take you a whole hour to read it. And that's if you're a slow reader, all right? But get it, and it's fun. And we'll talk about it in just a moment. Okay, the next one I haven't talked about but one time, briefly, but it's a really good book. It's called Last Child in the Woods by Richard Louv. And it's a book about how to get your child into nature even if you live in the middle of Dallas. All right? And it works. Because believe it or not, there's still dirt and trees and grass and oxygen and all those other things that are part of nature everywhere. We can't get away from it. So it mostly teaches you how to get your child away from the television, away from the telephone, away from all the electronics, and get them doing something that's going to build their character and build them up more related to their learning than the electronic devices. It's really an anti-technology book. But I've read it, it's fun to read, and I believe it'll work. Now, the next one is a book that I haven't mentioned before. The title of it is It's Complicated, The Social Lives of Networked Teens by Dana Boyd. There's probably 20 books out there that you can find talking about social media, the good and the bad of social media. Most of them are terribly condemning of social media, and I'm not sure that's not generally justified. However, if you really want to understand what social media means to your kids without being negative or positive, just what is it and what's it all about and why do they think so highly of it and why do they spend so much time, this book is a good book for that. Some of the books are negative, some books are positive. I wouldn't necessarily, this one's positive, but this one's fair. I have read it, and it's true. It's a very complicated situation, how our children think about this technology. But if you really want to get into your kid's head or know how to get into their head related to this, that's an excellent book. I very strongly recommend it. Media Choices, Convictions Are Compromised by Philip Telfer. He does the same thing I do related to these researchers. He's Baptist, not Church of Christ. All right? He does it for the Baptist community. He's written books on it. I've never got that far. But his books are all about the moral side of technology. And again, they're not heavy-duty reads, but they're really good. They're very, very biblical in their teachings. If you want to know more about the scriptural side and the biblical side of dealing with these problems, it's an excellent book. He and I have talked a number of times, I trust what he's written. Okay. And finally, the last one, Parenting Well in a Media Age, Keeping Our Kids Human by Gloria De Gaetano. This book, the last section, is entitled Regaining Your Parenting Identity. That's hard. If you lost it, it's hard. But we're going to cover the last part of that book at the end of tonight's session in order to give you some hope about, hey, there is some things you can do. Now, let's talk about the TechWise family. Now, as I said early on, I'm not normally touchy-feely. Andy Crouch is a little bit touchy-feely, okay? All right? And so all of this that we're now covering, I think, are great, wonderful, grand ideas. But I'm going to be honest with you. More power to you if you think you've got the discipline to do it all. But they're wonderful, wonderful ideas related to how to raise your family related to the media. Number one, we develop wisdom and courage together as a family. That's just the concept is, forget technology. Let's be a family. Let's study together. Let's do things together. The gentleman that wrote this book, Andy Crouch, he's a church pianist. That's what he does. And so he's really into music, big time. And so he's constantly in his book saying, do things as a family, do things as a family, do things as a family. I covered that the other day. And so he's saying it's a wonderful idea to counteract the negative side of the media. Number two, we want to create more than we consume, so we fill the center of our home and things that reward skill and active engagement. In other words, don't be totally complacent, not get anything done. Never learn. I mean, if your child is doing nothing but playing games on their phone or talking on their phone, no, never mind. People don't do that anymore. Are doing something with their phone, are they developing morally or educationally? No, they're not. He's saying, if you're going to have the technology there, make sure you're doing something with it where you are growing individually and you're growing as a family. And there's ways of doing that. Study a topic together. Research something together. Talk about something together. And as soon as you start talking about something, everybody's going to pull out their phones and start researching it. My son-in-law fact checks me pretty well every sentence I ever say. All right? Okay? All right? I can't say anything in front of him, and he doesn't have it fact checked. And I'm not always right. Okay? All right? My kids say that I exaggerate. All right? And I probably do. But he reminds me of it. He reminds me of it because he's got it figured out before my sentence is over. Okay? He's fast. All right. Number three. We are designed for a rhythm of work and rest. So one day a week, 1 week a year, we turn off our devices and worship, feast, play, and rest together. I've tried some of this. It's a wonderful, wonderful idea. Okay. I don't know if I can do it or not. I've done the day part. I've done the day part. That's not really hard. If it's not related to work, if I don't have any work duties, and I use the excuse that I work all the time. You know, somebody's always trying to get hold of me. All right, not really true, but I use that excuse. A week at a time, I don't know. Wife and I are going to Indiana to a family reunion. I call it go visit the Yankee relatives I don't know reunion. Outside of my wife, I won't know anybody else there. All right? Think I'm excited? All right? But that's what happens when you marry a Yankee. All right? So we're doing that. I think I may leave my phone. Okay? At least in the suitcase anyway. All right? I hope. I'm going to try. Because I know I don't have any work responsibilities because I'm in Indiana. They can't make me do anything. All right? So we'll see. Number four, we wake up before our devices do, and they go to bed before we do. That's a really, really good idea. The one of the mechanical things that parents deal with phones is charging them. Your kids' phones have to be charged. I say use that need to charge their phone as an excuse, ever how weak it may be, as an excuse to take it up at about 10 o'clock at night and lock it up in your part of the house on a charger. Your kids don't need to have their phones in their rooms with them at night. They just don't. All right? They can get by without it. And the first thing you'll notice is their grades will probably go up. And I know they'll be wider awake the next day if you just do something to control that. That's a hard one to do. But utilizing the electronics side of it, the fact that it's got to be charged up. I say that from my experience at a children's home. At our children's home, we did allow our kids to have phones. Okay? But we weren't going to let them have them at night. So we took them all up at usually 10 o'clock, put them on the charger in a locked up closet, and let it go at that. That's going to be hard for you to do if your kids have never had any restraints on their phones. Try it. Number five, we aim for no screens before double digits, 10 o'clock at school or at home. I wish I could do that, but I'm guilty. I'm sorry. Okay. Do you know what the first thing we do when we get up in the morning is for almost everybody? We go to the bathroom. Okay. What's the second thing we do? We check our phones. I'm talking about society as a whole. The majority of us. The first thing we do is go to the bathroom, and as soon as we get back, we check our phones. All right? It's not a good idea. It's not a good idea to start your day with those issues, especially if you're working, with those issues related to what's on your phone. What I try to do now, and I've succeeded a few times at this, is not look at my phone until I'm well in the office. And that's usually about 9 o'clock. My day goes better if I haven't looked at my phone first thing in the morning, if I start that way. Again, these are great ideas. Do them if you can. Number six, we use screens for a purpose, and we use them together rather than aimlessly and alone. This is very, very similar to that first concept we look at, which is do something with your phones. You're going to play with your phones. Do something constructive. I think the worst I was ever insulted by my daughter and son-in-law, I'm sitting at the Thanksgiving dinner table telling some story for the 40th time. You know how grandpas can be, all right? And they're sitting there texting to each other back and forth, bad-mouthing my story. Okay? All right? Now, the thing is, I could tell what they're doing by when the giggles came. Okay? All right. That wasn't a good purpose, okay, for their phone. But an example of just how silly some of our uses of the phone can be. I really, really believe this one. And I think this is not that hard to enforce. Car time is conversation time. When you're in the car with your child, you need to tell them to put the phone down. Number one, you as a driver, even the passenger, should not have a phone in your hand. That's not a good idea, especially if you're the driver. And a lot of people die because of texting and phone calls and things of that sort. But tell your kids, put the phone down so that either you can learn what quiet time is, which may happen, all right, or you can talk about the issues of the day. You need to talk to your kids sometime. So when you're in the car, use that as a time to talk. Spouses should have one another's passwords, and parents should have total access to their children's devices. I've always felt that this was not debatable, not questionable. I give my wife my passwords. I don't think she's ever gone to look to see where I went, but she's got them. Okay? And I know hers, mostly because she can't remember them. All right? But know each other's passwords. And parents should have total control of their children's access. You should have their Facebook password if they've got their phone. If most kids do not password protect their phones, but if they have, make sure you know what that is. Your child will say, "You're violating my privacy." And y'all know what I think about that. All right? I think you're being a bad parent if you don't do that. I'm going to say it out loud. I think you're being an irresponsible parent if you don't know your kids' passwords. We learn to sing together rather than letting recorded and amplified music take over our lives in worship. I told you this guy was an artist. I mean, a musician. Okay? So in his family, that's what they do. You might not want to pick music as the thing to do. You might want to do something different. But it is helpful to find something that you can do as a family, besides watch TV. All right. Number 10, we show up in person for the big events in life. We learn by being fully present for our moments of greatest vulnerability. We hope to die in one another's arms. That is so abstract that I have trouble comprehending it. However, what he's saying there is be a family. Be a family. Be a family. All right? Be around each other. Take care of each other. Show your love and concern for each other. We had a family reunion week before last. My mother passed away a year and a half ago. She didn't leave very much money, and in mind, my sister's money anyway. All right. What little bit she left was $7,000. All right. And so we decided, what do we do with that? It was our money anyway. We could do what we wanted to. And so we threw a family reunion. We went and rented the biggest bed and breakfast in Lufkin, Texas, and invited everybody that wanted to come, all the relatives. Say, if you need gas to get here, if you need groceries, we don't care. So we had 25 of the 28 direct relatives we have in the family. We're all there. It was really cool. What amazed me, for a family that had never all gotten together before, we had never done this before, not even for funerals, okay, because everybody lived too far away. It amazed me how cool we were as a family. It was awesome, y'all. So even in your smaller family, you and the husband and the kids, whatever the case may be, spend time as a family. And remember that you need to be vulnerable and loving to each other and respect the family side of that. It's not always easy to do. But if you're not together, it'll never happen. Now, let's talk about video games. I told you this had a different combination of things. This is brand new material. I say brand new, I put it together 3 weeks ago. All right. 64% of all Americans' households own a device that they use to play video games. When I first saw that number, I thought, that's a stretch. Then I realized we have a Wii system in our house. Okay? And that's a video game. All right? We use it for exercise. We use it for bowling. We love to bowl with the Wii system. All right? We use it to ride around on a bicycle in pretty places. Okay. It's still a video game. 64% of all American households have a platform of some kind, video game platform. Now, this is the number that will surprise you the most. Women are the biggest user of video games. Specifically, the most common video game player today by gender and age is a 34-year-old female. Now, of course, they're not playing the shoot 'em up war games, but they are playing video games. They make up adult women, that's 24 to 35, I think, is what the number is, make up 33% of all video game users. Teenage boys only make up 17% of the video game users. Then you can take all the other groups you can think of, and that will tell you where the rest of them are. The point there is don't when we think of video games, I instinctively think of teenage boys. They're only 17% of the video game users. You got to remember that the 34-year-old female or the 34-year-old male 17 years ago was how old? 17. It just means they started using video games as a kid and never gave it up. That's what's happened. All right. Violent crimes by youth. Now, y'all, this is surprising numbers to me. Violent crimes by youth ages 12 to 17 have decreased by almost 80% in the last 40 years, along with the levels of arrest. Yes, we think the world is getting worse. And the bad stuff is getting worse. We deal with school shootings. We deal with office shootings. We deal with, I've had to go through 5 classes now on, what do they call it, active shooter stuff. Okay. And I know because I've been around, y'all have done some things about that in this congregation. I'm not supposed to see them and tell them, but I can tell they're there. Okay? All right? That's a problem. We have protocol now at church where I'm at. I'm about a 400-member congregation, and we know who's wired with the headphones and who's not. We know which doors to lock during services. We know who's armed. All right? I'm a minister there, so I know. Crime, we've been typically blaming it all on teenage boys. But overall, violence of teenage boys particularly has gone down. That's gone down a lot. That's a good thing, y'all. The problem is within the news, and I'm just not talking now, within the news, the bad stuff is getting so much worse that we forget that the day-to-day stuff is not as bad as it used to be. Current research on video games indicates violent video games, young children are more likely to demonstrate physical aggression. We know that. The kid plays a violent video game, he's going to imitate it. Notice the last sentence there, and that's new research. It's typically short term. We used to think it was always long term. The men, if they got angry over that and got aggressive over that, they're going to stay that way. That's not what the research says. I'm surprised. I didn't want it to be that way. All right? I thought when they got angry, they stayed angry. And the video game was the whole cause of it. That's not what the research says. I'm not trying to go soft on video games, y'all, but I am trying to tell you what the research actually says. And it's not as bad as I always thought it was. Boys appear to be affected more in video games than girls. Don't we love to have scientists spend millions of dollars telling us what we already know? Okay, all right. They did, okay. Boys appear to be more effective than girls. Now, this is again, new stuff. Highly controlled laboratory environments as compared to natural settings are more likely to indicate harm. What they're really saying there, and I've studied how to do this kind of research many, many times, what they're saying there is you have, I don't remember the technical term for it, but it's where the experiment itself causes the outcome. I don't remember the terminology for that. And what they're saying here is that if you set up an experiment with young men or women related to video games, that experiment will show more harm than real life doing the same thing. Part of it's because it is an experiment and it's a laboratory. Very little support to show that video games cause adults to be more aggressive. Now, there is research that says that it'll cause youth to be more aggressive. We'll talk a bit about that in a moment. But there's very, very little, almost nothing that says it will cause a mature adult to become more aggressive. Now, I never thought it did anyway, but it's good that the researchers have figured that out. A person's natural level of aggression. I don't like bringing this one up, y'all, okay? A person's natural level of aggression, nature, or the trait aggression, is a superior predictor of future violent behaviors. The big debate in any kind of social work is nature versus nurture. That is, how much of who they are related to what's in their head, related to how they were raised. Now, I've already indicated some indicators of how important that how they're raised is. But they're saying when it comes to video games, if they're likely to become more aggressive, it's because of what's already in their head. Okay? That's sad because it means we're not really in as much control of that as we want to be. All right? They're saying nature is probably the key link to aggression in video games, not nurture. I love this one. A publishing bias in favor of harmful effects has been proven. That means if you read all the reports and look at which ones are fair, which ones lean in the wrong direction, which ones lean in the right direction, that the research says that there's more wrong with video games than what happens in real life. Again, don't think I'm wimping out on video games. They are bad. They're just not quite as bad as we thought they were. Violence in video games does physiologically arouse the players. That means they can make you mad. They can make you angry. They can make you aggressive. We know that, okay? But they've proven that related to research. Now, I think this is one of the most important ones. Those who are naturally more aggressive, angry, or violent are more attracted to video games. But it's not proven to be in the other direction. It's saying if they're already aggressive, tendency towards violence, they're already leaning in that direction, video games will probably make them more so. Gets back to that nature side. But it's saying it doesn't work the other direction. They're saying if you're a calm, peaceful, responsible person, the video game will not make you a criminal. That's good to know, okay? Gamers do not believe they're being harmed. Remember girls play these games too. Have you ever had a boy or girl tell you that video game was doing them damage? No. They don't believe it is. And basically, none of them believe it is. They wouldn't do it if they thought it was hurting them. Here's the bottom line. And this was new research to me, and I can prove this if I have to, y'all. Compared to violence in video games, television violence may actually be more harmful to children. That's the reason I didn't kick out that television section that I used to think about taking out. Video games are bad, television's worse when it comes to what it does to your children growing up. Okay, any questions before I start the next section? Don't make it too hard. Okay. because this is my last section. We're going to get through pretty good bit early. How do you regain your parenting identity? This last book that I mentioned here, Parenting Well in a Media Age, Keeping Our Kids Human by Glory DeGiotano, this is the last chapter or two in that book. She spends most of the book, at least the first half of it, trying to convince you that all of these problems with the media are media industry products. In other words, all the problems that we're dealing with, related to video games, related to television, related to the internet, it's all being put there on purpose by mean, ugly people who don't care about us and our kids. She does a good job of convincing you of that. Do I think some of it's true? Yes, I do. I was thinking, driving up here, I was trying to remember the name of the guy who produces Family Guy. Now, y'all don't want me to bad mouth. Y'all don't know what I think about the show Family Guy. Okay, all right. But the guy that produces it also does American Dad and a bunch of other shows. I don't remember his name. I think he's an evil person. When I think of evil people, he's the top of my list. Okay? All right? Because he creates such trash that affects our children so much in a very, very negative way. That's the TV I'm really worried about. American Dad, Family Guy, a bunch of others. Simpsons is on the list, but it's not as bad as these others. Okay? All right? I used to have a whole section on bad television programs. But people got mad because I wasn't mean enough on some of them, okay? Everybody's got their favorite, most hated television show, okay? And if I didn't bring it up, they would get mad at me. So I quit talking about it. But how do we regain our parenting identity? First of all, we need to pay attention to what the Bible says. I was thinking driving over here, if I was going to recommend reading for all the problems we've talked about, it would be in the Psalms. Because many times, David in particular deals with problems of evil, problems of doubt, he deals with his problems. And he talks to God about those problems. But the solution in almost every one of the writings is go back to God, go back to God, go back to God. So, cannot downplay the importance of just personal Bible study in these problems. There's a lot of problems that we all deal with in our lives, and there's some problems I deal with. And I got one or two problems I know a solution to. And the only answer to those problems is to pray about it. So there's things I pray about specifically because I don't know the answer to those. And you may be that way with this particular question of how do we handle our children. Says here, even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right. Proverbs 20:11. 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Here's the challenge, and this came from that book. The media have become the mainstream culture in children's lives. Parents have become the alternative. Americans once expected children to... were expected to raise their children in accordance with the dominant cultural messages. Today, they're expected to raise their children in opposition to it. In other words, we talk about the good old days. With the advantage of the good old days, which weren't always good, but the advantage of the good old days is there was a set of norms. And within society, for the most part, we accepted those norms. And when it came to how we raised our kids, we saw how the neighbor was successfully raising their kid with this way, so we imitated it. Or our parents told us, if you do this, this will happen. Okay? If your child watches all of the shows on the Comedy Channel related to teenagers and enacts those actions, are you going to be happy? For the most part, no. Okay? Because they have relationships of types that we don't agree with, and pretty well every one of them now. All right? They have things they have boy-girl relationships that we don't necessarily agree with. They have terms that we don't agree with. They have language we don't agree with. And those media sources are telling your children to go against what you're teaching them. So there is a real conflict out there. 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. I really believe that your child's most common company is probably whatever they're watching or paying attention to on their phone. Think about how much time your child spends in some form of media compared to face-to-face with you. And it'll probably be 10 to 1, more than likely. Here are the key questions. I'm sorry you can't read the top part. The key questions for parents in a media-generated culture. These are things you need to ask yourself. And I don't have the answers to all these questions. But this is what you need to think about when it comes to raising your kids. What messages do we want to be most influential in shaping the emerging identity of our children? Which you need to be careful what messages are thrown at them. They're receiving messages from many, many directions. They need to have messages that come from you that are positive and moral, because they're getting messages from the other side that are not positive and moral. Next question. How do we help our children intentionally choose what is in their best interest? Again, it gets down to teaching, of course. But you need to make positive choices available to them. Things that are good for them. This is not related to morals, but when I was a little kid, my mom worked. And I basically, even from three years on, my sister, who's 4 years older than me, was my babysitter. All right? 7-year-old babysitting 3-year-old. All day long. All the time. So I was pretty well raised that way. All right? But what did my mom do? My mom only went to the 7th grade, y'all. But she made sure that she bought all the right books, all the right biblical books, even though we didn't go to church. We bought all the right biblical books and all the right educational books and World Book Encyclopedia, which I read from cover to cover, all right? They were in the house. So when I'm sitting there bored, I could learn something. So that's part of what we're talking about here, is make sure that your child has choices available. It might be restricting some of the things. It might be finding games, video games, that'll teach them something rather than just keep them busy. I did have the list of the most popular video games, and I took it out, but I had the top 10. And what I loved was the fact that 6 of the top 10 were either baseball, football, or basketball, or car racing. Okay? All right. Oh, I know they're mindless games in some form, but it's a whole lot better than one-person shooter games where you can see how many people you can kill in 5 minutes. Okay? All right. Which was number one. Okay, all right. Next question. How do we nurture our children's and teens' healthy autonomy within a media-driven culture? It's hard to do. They need to learn to be responsible for their own actions and behavior, but they're going to have direction from you, and they're not going to be necessarily responsive. Y'all have heard me say this over and over, but I believe wholeheartedly the statement that I've said over and over, which is, it is not your child's job to act like they care what you say. They're not going to act like it. But believe me, just believe me here. They've heard you. They're not going to act like they heard you, but they heard you. And sooner or later, that instruction will come to fruition. I truly believe that. So don't say, I'm not going to tell them what I think because they're not listening to it. That ain't going to work. Tell them anyway. Bore them to death. Because they will remember what you said pretty well, word for word. And I really, really, really believe that. I've seen it happen in too many families, including my own. How do parents get the relevant information that we need? How do we get what we need? Y'all, it takes some study and it takes some work to stay ahead of your child on this. Okay? All right, if nothing else works, go to YouTube if you don't want to read the stuff. All right? You can find everything you want related to everything we're talking about in a video on YouTube. So if you just don't want to read, all right, look up Raising My Child in a Media World. All of my seminars on YouTube 4 or 5 times, all right? It's there. And there's good stuff out there, some real good stuff out there. So you don't even have to read a book. You don't even have to go to Amazon, okay? You can find it on YouTube. How can we stop the escalation of sensational, mindless intake? And that's the answer to that question is by taking some control. You're not going to get complete control. Y'all heard what I said the other day. If you tell your child they can't do something, what are they related to the video, TV, or anything else? What are the odds that they're going to do it anyway? 75% of the time. So you're not going to stop them from doing it, but they need to know that it's wrong or that you think that it's wrong. They need to at least feel guilty for it. And so they can't, though, if you haven't told them what you think. So how do we stop the escalation? You tell them what's good, you tell them what's right, and you make sure that they have other things available, whether it's a game, whether it's an app or whatever, to play with. If they're in, this is what I did. When we were in charge of teenage boys as house parents, video games were new. And they really liked first-person shooter games, all right, which I really believe are really, really bad for their character and for our society as a whole, all right? Because those games were originally invented. I'm not making this up, y'all. Video games were originally invented to teach our soldiers how to kill better. Why do you think, I'm going to go on this for a moment, why do you think they got so widespread so quick? It's because the technology that created video games was produced by the U.S. government. And you know what that means? It means it's in the public domain. It means nobody had to pay for the technology to take their version of it and turn it into a shooter game. Video games were invented to teach our soldiers to increase their rate of kill. I just say take that for what it's worth. All right. However, when I was in charge of these teenage boys and they wanted to play first-person shooter games, I wouldn't do it. Hey, y'all, every boy I had in my house was there on probation already. Okay? All right? I was a therapeutic foster parent. We took juvenile probation boys, okay? No, but what I did, I found a game that was pretty harmless. I found, NASCAR? Yeah. I found racing games, okay? All they wanted to do was stay busy and stay excited. So between racing games and football games, they had a good time. And they never complained that they weren't allowed to kill 20 people per second. All right? So that's a good way of handling that. How can parents meet their children's real human and spiritual needs? And the answer to that question is be there for them. Don't ignore them. Tell them what you think. Tell them what you think related to spiritual issues as well. Do it. Now, this was the conclusion of her book, I believe. So how do we claim or reclaim, more likely reclaim, our parenting identity? I'm just explaining this the best I know how. Number one, love your child and make sure they know that you love them. Use the words, I love you. Nothing works better than the words, I love you, I care for you. They may doubt it sometimes. You need to tell them. Number two, have a positive intention. In other words, be proactive, as I've been trying to say all week long. Think I am going to deal with this problem, and I'm going to be very intent and not give up on it. And just do it. And it might not work the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, but sooner or later, I'm going to make a dent. And a dent's better than nothing. And then the next one is participate in the child's life. As they get to be teenagers and older, it gets pretty well impossible to participate in their life. But remember, they're still looking to you for money, which is the number one way that you participate in their lives. Okay? You still control the money most of the time. Use that for what it's worth. Transportation, all those other things that you still give your child. Participate with them, be a part of that. When you put all that together, you have a great array of tools that make you an aware parent. And that's what we all need to strive to be. My kids are grown, but I still want to be aware of what's going on in their lives. I've got grandkids. I want to be very aware of what's going on in their lives. So I do as much of this as I can so that we can be that kind of a family, even extended family, that we all need to be. This is what you get from holding a parenting identity with your children. And this is noble. And it may be in some ways pie in the sky, but it sure helps to work on it. Number one, you get an increased aliveness, awareness, ability to know the good in your child's life. Why? Because you know that the good that they're doing. You may know the bad they're doing, but you'll know more about the good that they're doing. You get a consistency and resolve that you're helping your child grow as they should. You don't feel guilty for not doing anything because you're doing what you can. Self-trust and confidence. You know you're doing your best. And the ability to show your nonconformity and integrity. I think the last one is most critical. We, especially as Christians, we're nonconformists. We're serious nonconformists when it comes to what the overall world wants us to be and do. And your children are fighting that because they've got everybody telling them to conform to these non-biblical principles. You're going to have to show the fact that you're not willing to conform so that they possibly can model that. So how can we make sure that we're walking the talk? You're walking the talk. And what they're talking about here is, if you've made the effort to do the things we're talking about here, you're going to get wore out. You're going to be tired. So this is how you reward yourself. Make regular time to explore your challenges with someone you respect. Don't keep it to yourself. We all need somebody to talk to. And there'll be somebody here at church, if you don't have a family member, that you need to break open and share your problems with. They might not do anything but listen. But it makes you feel better when people listen. Reward yourself for staying in your integrity. We all have ways with things we do to make ourselves feel good. Okay? I did something yesterday that made me feel well, real well. So I thought, I'm going to go to Denny's and eat what I want to eat. Okay? All right? Okay? That's what I did. All right? Use a journal to talk through difficulties that you may be facing. Write it down. Go away to some place to reflect. Every now and then, get out of the house. Go to the park. Go. There's always some place you can go. It's not hard to find a quiet place, even in the city. Be mindful of what bugs you. Pay attention to it and do something about it. And practice observing the consequences, good and bad, of your choices. That means think about what you did that worked and think about what you did that didn't work. All right? And then, and that's where the journal comes into place, and then work on it from there. So how do we parent from a clear identity? Number one, this is a repeat, but we'll do it again. Participate in the life of your child. Number two, keep in touch with your deep parental love. You love your child or you will not be concerned about the things we're talking about. Remember how deep that love is. Strive to remain centered and consistent, especially when under stress. When we get mad or upset, we do stupid things. Don't let that happen. Affirm your parental right to set firm boundaries. That's a key thing I've been trying to say all week. You do have the right as the parent to set boundaries. It might be hard to come back and pull them back. Do what you can. Do what you can. Trust your deep knowing. Act in confidence. I don't think there's any of us here that do not sincerely love our children. Let that deep love that you have keep you confident that you're doing the right thing. Dare to be different, embracing nonconformity in a very world full of conformity. I don't know how that's right. Nonconformity in a very world full of conformity. Okay, that's right. Dare to be different. We, as I said earlier, we are, as Christians, we're nonconformers to most of society. Live with it. Take time to clarify your values and make a conscious decisions. Think about what you're doing. And that's it. So I hope those help. Many of you, like six or seven of you, came to me and said, I'm struggling. I'm not winning the battle right now. These aren't fix-it-all answers, but they're a whole lot better than nothing. And so please, please. Now my handout, which will be at the back, will literally have all of this word for word. What you saw here is in that handout. So, and if not, buy the book. It will, the first part of it will bore you, but the rest of it is really, 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 really good stuff. Anybody have any questions? Well, let me say that if not, I...
I do have one.
Yes, sir.
You know, people talk about when we were growing up, I'm a baby boomer.
Yeah.
You know, and in your adolescent years, as a teenager, there was a payphone. I mean, didn't have a payphone. We didn't have any, you know, smartphones back then.
It says baby boomers, we didn't have phones. Right.
So my question is at what age, if you have a kid, let's say, for example, what age would you actually buy them a phone and let them have a phone?
I had asked that question the other day. 13.
13.
Mm-hmm. I think below that, it's a gadget and it's a conformity thing. The reason I don't really like the fact that they have them at 13, but I think because of the societal pressure, and I'm not saying you're giving in, but because of the societal pressure, normal. If our kids don't want to do nothing else, they want to be normal. Okay? And I think 13 is a good age. I think you can hold it. If you try hard, you can hold it till they're 13. And then after that, I tell you what they'll do. They'll go get one anyway. They can go buy one at Dollar General, okay? All right? And I've had it happen. All right? You can buy a phone for $10 at Dollar General and pay $40 for a card, and you're in good business for a while, okay, until the card runs out. All right? It's too easy to get phones now. Okay? And they don't check your age at Dollar General. Okay? There's no requirement that you be an adult to buy one. Okay? That is the cheapest place to get one, by the way. Okay? All right. Okay. Well, again, I've totally enjoyed this week. I'm going to go see the other grandbabies in Abilene tomorrow morning. They have a big event, a citywide event. They call it CAF, the Children's Arts Literature Festival. And it's a big hoopie, okay? There'll be thousands of people there. They'll have real artists. I mean, the guys that wrote these children's books, they always bring some big-name guy in that did all the artwork for it. They always have new bronze statues there. Lots of good food, and it's my oldest grandchild's birthday, okay, all right, and she'll be there with us. She'll be 9 years old tomorrow, so I've very much enjoyed being here. This one been easily one of my most enjoyable ever presentations of this material. I think you need to know that I will make this presentation for any church without a speaker's fee, all right? I don't charge a speaker's fee. I charge transportation only, all right? So if you know of another congregation that would like to have me, typically on a Sunday, most of the time, I don't have any more vacation Bible school slots open this summer. Y'all realize this ate up a week, okay? My boss is not real pleased with me. But I would love to do it. And I've only got one more schedule right now, and it is a VBS in Killeen, Texas. And I like to do about one a month. And I'll go anywhere in the country. I've been all the way from Florida to California. And be glad to do it. And I love to do it. And y'all have encouraged me again and again in many ways, and I thank you for that. I'm going to say a prayer and I'll be through. Gracious Heavenly Father, as we again look at the issues of our children and our grandchildren, we pray that you will help us to have the wisdom that comes from prayer and from the study of your word. We pray that you shall give us the confidence to do what we need to do. We pray for our children and our grandchildren. They are growing up in a very, very difficult world that we don't always have the ability to control. Give us the strength and the wisdom to do all we can. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thank y'all.
Parents, before you leave, we brought Brother McGuire in to specially give the presentations that he did, but we also have the adult Bible study book for the VBS available to you, so you can get a copy of it. I've got the box down here, and I'm going to pass them out if you would like one. It's another opportunity to have some quality time with your child or grandchild and go over some of the lessons that they went through this week. So if you would like a copy of it, we've got the adult VBS book, and all the lessons were the same day to day. So of course it's in an adult format, but it gives you something to talk to them about.